Please call the roll.
Chair Beleka.
Here.
Vice Chair Moraitis.
Here.
Representatives Ahern.
Here.
Bracey. Diaz.
Here.
Hager.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
McGee. Metz.
Here.
Hasidomo.
Here.
Saunders.
Here.
Spano.
Here.
Stone.
Thanks. Let the record show a quorum is present. And first up, we have two bills today. Representative Rayburn's up first with House Bill 195, Education Data Privacy.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, House Bill 195, our proposed committee substitute for House Bill 195, an act relating to education data privacy. Thank you very much for this opportunity. This bill will prohibit an educational agency or institution from collecting, obtaining, or retaining information regarding a student, a student's parent, or a student's sibling as it relates to political affiliation, voting history, religious affiliation, or biometric information. It also provides a definition for biometric information. It also requires that an agency or institution may not provide confidential education records to any person, district, or the federal government except when required by law, subpoena, or court order. The bill also requires the Department of Education to phase out the use of Social Security numbers as student identifiers for data collection purposes. Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Anybody questions on the bill? Representative Ahern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I spoke with the bill sponsor earlier, and I really don't have a lot of problems with the bill, except it does have one unintended consequence, and I'll let you address that. The hand scanning we talked about for lunchroom to speed up the line. Right now it's about a 20-minute or 10-minute wait in line and 20 minutes to eat because they can do it so fast and efficiently using the technology of the hand scanning. So could you address that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that is, you know, you brought that to my attention. There are several school districts that use that at some schools. From my perspective, you know, we have a lot of schools around the state that have figured out how to get lunchtime down quickly without having to collect biometric information. You know, when I was in high school, we used a four-digit PIN, and that sped the process along. We were able to make it through the line. I understand that you have a concern there. At this point, we've taken the stand that really protecting that biometric information about our kids that we can't change, we can't change their fingerprints, we can't change what their hand scans are, we want to, if we don't collect that information, we don't run the risk of there being any sort of data breaches like we've seen recently with Target and some of the other big retailers of stealing information. We just don't put our kids at risk by allowing the collection of that data.
Any other questions, members? Representative Pasadena.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for reaching out to me. I'm sorry to get a chance to talk to you. And I think this is a good bill based upon some of the concerns that were raised last year. And I just want to confirm, you know, from my reading of this bill, sort of it's in two parts. Number one, all information is confidential and can only be distributed pursuant to law. So I'd like to address what would the law be that would allow that? And then secondly, there would be no collection of, you know, those biometric type items or political, you know, affiliations or stuff like that. So that doesn't even come into play into being released by law. Is that right?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes. This would completely prohibit the collection of biometric information and only allow the release of information as it pertains to federal law, the commonly known as FERPA, but the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. I don't know all the details of the federal law, but in the state of Florida, you would not be able to release information unless you're required to under FERPA or there was a court order or subpoena. So we're saying in state law, you can't release any data unless it's required by law.
Okay. Representative Saunders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a couple of questions, so I'll look to you to
cut you off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. My first question is, Representative Rayburn, related to the Florida Virtual School. Florida Virtual School and our virtual charters are obviously unique in that it requires collecting data and sharing it in unique ways. And I'm just wondering, Can you clarify for me whether or not our virtual charters in Florida's virtual school are included in these protections you're creating?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, they are included. They are a school district of the state of Florida, so they would be subject to the state law as it relates to this. We're made aware of some issues yesterday that Florida virtual schools may have as it comes to virtual education, and we're looking at those to try to find a solution that makes sure that we can still provide education to our kids using the latest technology and making sure that we aren't hindering their ability to have virtual schools as a choice, but then also protecting that very important data that kids can't get back if it's lost.
Follow-up to that. I haven't heard from FVS or the virtual charters. I just was reading it and thought they're not. I don't see them in the bill overtly. Can you just share a little bit more about what they are saying some of the complications might be and maybe a potential solution for it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Florida Virtual School hasn't come saying they have problems with it. We were made aware yesterday that there could be some unintended consequences as it relates to the providing digital education and making sure that the student that's sitting there is who they say they are. We haven't come up with any sort of answer to that question yet, but we're working on it.
That was it?
I have more. Okay. Representative Rayburn, I really like the bill. If I have one concern, it's that maybe it doesn't go far enough. And so this question may not be for you. It may be for the department. But I'm wondering right now how DOE is interpreting FERPA and when it comes to the research study exemption. So there's this exemption in the federal law that says if you're doing a research study, and this came up last year when we were dealing with a different bill, if you're doing a research study, you can apply to get personally identifiable information. There's some restrictions about whether or not it'll be destroyed or not. But I'm wondering how DOE is dealing with that interpretation right now. And really, for you, in your opinion, if you think that we should, as the state, be putting into statute a more restrictive interpretation.
We have Tanya Cooper, I know, as on an appearance card, so I don't know if you want to wait for Tanya to come up.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would.
Tanya's shaking her head. You don't want to talk about that either.
Yeah, I would defer to them on that first part of the question. The second part, me personally, I would love to see us be more restrictive on the data that we're allowed to release outside of our state.
Okay, everybody good? A couple of, we're into testimony, a couple of public testimony, appearance cards, and first up, Tanya Cooper from the Department of Education. Take a shot, as long as you're sorry. You're in the middle there, you don't have to walk through. Okay.
Matt Carson, General Counsel.
Yeah, you can come up.
If I get too in the weeds or if I misspeak, I'm sure my folks will let me know. There is a research exemption, but it's my understanding that the department at no time gives out student names, social security numbers, anything like that. To the extent we provide student-level data for research purposes, it's always, as best we can, anonymized. The students are given a random number that can't be traced back to them in any way. But I believe, for the most part, most of the research data we give is aggregated to the point where no one can backwards engineer it to find out a specific student or anything about a specific student. Does that answer the question?
You want to follow up?
As the attorney for DOE, do you see any reason why we couldn't articulate in statute the practice that you just described?
Well, having worked with Mr. Chair,
I was giving you some leeway because you don't have.
I apologize.
Representative Morita said your handlers were not coming up with you, so you're just you're just unleashed. Feel free to do whatever you want.
Well, they did tell me a little bit about how I was supposed to try to handle it. The problem is, and we've worked with House staff on some of this type of language in the past. The problem is you can never fully anticipate. Or fully address all of the concerns that you might have going forward. FERPA is fairly restrictive, in my opinion, as to what information is allowed to be released and when. To be honest, I feel like it provides a decent amount of protection against the inappropriate or improper release of student-level data. This bill, as I understand it, takes it a step further and goes into a bunch of things that aren't specifically referenced by FERPA. And for that reason, the department supports this bill, thinks it's a good bill. I don't know that we can necessarily articulate everything to the satisfaction of everybody who has different concerns about student-level data getting out. I think a reading of FERPA and its regulations would probably get most people to a certain comfort level, and the department follows FERPA.
Thank you so much. And you're going to have to fill out an appearance card after the fact. That's fine.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Back up. Thank you. Ashley Spicola from the Governor's Office.
Governor's Office, Ways and Support.
Okay. Anyone else out there wishing to testify? Okay, members, we're on debate. Debate. Representative Saunders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mentioned to you, Representative Rayburn, that I'm happy to support the bill. What I feel like we just heard, and that's what I'd hoped that we would hear, is that we do have the ability to anticipate some, if not, we might not be able to think of everything, but we can think of some things. And I think it's an appropriate place in statute, and this bill is a good vehicle for it, to articulate clearly that the department will not give out for any purpose related, especially to third-party groups. We can have a debate about whether or not that should be true within educational institutions, but at least as far as it comes to third-party groups that are doing studies, foundations, think tanks, whoever, we should not be giving out personally identifiable information about students or parents, and there should be consequences if you do. I think we can put that in statute, and I think we should, and I hope you'd be willing to including that in the bill.
Members, any further debate? Okay, Representative Rayburn, you're recognized to close.
I'll wave close.
Okay. Having waved close, Kaylee, will you please call the roll?
Chair Beleka.
Yes.
Representatives Ahern.
Yes.
Racy.
Yes.
Diaz.
Yes.
Hager.
Yes.
Jones.
Yes.
McGee.
Yes.
Metz.
Yes.
Moraitis.
Yes.
Pasadoma.
Yes.
Saunders.
Yes.
Spano?
Yes.
Stone?
Yes.
By your vote, show House Bill 195 is reported favorably. Congratulations. Wow, Representative Rayburn travels with an entourage. That was pretty neat. Having no entourage surrounding him, we now have Representative Diaz up with House Bill 313, Gender-Specific Schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm trying to stay away from the entourage. members, this bill is a bill relating to single gender, gender-specific education, and the real nuts and bolts of the bill is to create an avenue for a pilot program, which I hope to get some funding for from EDAPROPES, to create a pilot program. Now, I do want to clarify that in statute as it is today, we can already do this, and there are districts that are already doing it, and there is going to be some testimony to that effect. What I'm trying to do here is trying to provide an avenue to incentivize some of the other districts that may not be doing it, that are looking for an opportunity to try this as an educational choice. And what I'm trying to do here today is kind of trying to spread the idea across the state. It also will allow us to collect some data on results of these gender-specific schools and classrooms, and you know, share that data with all of the 67 districts across the state for our educators to make, you know, a decision, and for us as policymakers going forward with our appropriations to make decisions. So that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Diaz. Questions? Representative Moraitis.
All right, thank you. And have you gotten any feedback, Representative Diaz, from people who operate these types of schools?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moraitis, ironically enough, we have a lot of feedback, and most of it is coming from Broward County, which we share. We represent Broward County. There are actually five single-gender elementary schools now functioning in Broward County, and Superintendent Runcy is a very big proponent of this as a choice. And I want to be very clear that this is a choice, not a mandated program, which parents can opt in or out of. We're also going to have testimony today from Hillsborough County, which has a large single-gender program across their district, and they have some very good information for us.
Any other questions? Representative Ahern.
So the bill is asking for some more, looks like more studies to be done. Is that the Is that what I'm to understand? If you do this, you would be required to do certain things to provide performance reports, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, we neglected to mention there's a committee substitute that streamlines the bill. Actually, we are asking the schools to participate to give us data, academic performance data, so that we can compare it. And the idea is to, number one, make it available to the department. Number two, make it available to school districts and compare, for us to be able to compare the performance of students in these schools to similar schools in the same geographic area, demographic areas, and their performance, and see what effect this has on it. And the idea is to provide professional development for the administrators and the teachers, so we don't just say we're going to throw boys in one classroom and girls in the other, but we also need to provide professional development for those teachers to actually have strategies that are geared towards teaching boys or teaching girls to try to get the best performance out of them.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So with this additional training, wouldn't that create a fiscal impact of some sort?
Recognize.
Sure. It would be a pilot program, and the money that would be put into the pilot by EdApprobes would be a small amount, and what we're looking for is to be able to incentivize and provide those districts that want to do it the ability to train these teachers. The long-term effect of that would be that we provide this training, and then the teachers that are trained become trainers, and each district kind of has their own source of training to be able to keep moving forward if they want to expand this program. So we're kind of providing them the ability to launch the program and then have it be self-sustaining.
Okay. Representative Saunders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is related, Representative Diaz, to the development of the professional development courses. Can you just talk a little bit more about how that's going to happen? Is it going to be district to district? Is the department going to take lead on it? And what my question is rooted in a concern, a mild concern, but a legitimate one, that that can be done wrong, that if we're not teaching the right way, all of a sudden you might be reinforcing gender stereotypes. I would hate to see a classroom, for example, of girls where they're being taught about math through cooking and shopping because the expectation is that women like to cook and shop. So that's a dramatic example, but...
Well, my wife contradicts that.
I contradict it.
The shopping she has, the cooking she doesn't, but...
Yeah, how do we do it right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Saunders, that's actually a very good point. And something that I really want to stress is that it for me, the biggest portion, most important portion of this is the professional development, and to make sure that we have, nationally recognized entities or trainers doing this. But I do want to stress that this is talking about academic subjects, and so I don't want to confuse the strategies that we use to teach boys or to teach girls with the content. We're still going to teach them math. We're still teaching them language. We're still teaching them English. So to answer your question, yes, that's a very important part, and I want to work with the department and with some other entities that have participated in this, even with the school districts that have done it, to make sure that whatever we choose for this is the proper training. At the same time, it's kind of developed in a manner where it protects us from that, because we're dealing with the subject matter at hand. And the part of this is that the fact that we separate the boys and the girls allows them to kind of let them be themselves in the classroom. But having gender-specific classrooms while they still go to the same school still allows for social opportunities at lunch, during recess, during non-academic courses for them to interact. So this is kind of the best of both worlds. And you're right, the training needs to be spot on with the specific strategies of the science of why they learn differently.
Okay. On testimony, first up, we have Yolanda Cash-Jackson from Broward County Public Schools. Good afternoon.
Yolanda Cash-Jackson on behalf of Broward County Schools. Broward County has had this program for 2 years and found it very successful. Although we have only some preliminary results, we do show that there's a reduction of referrals, reduction of suspensions, increase in
Thank you. Next up, from Hillsboro, Carla Sparks.
County Public Schools. We have 12 schools participating in single-gender classrooms. Nine of those are elementary schools, one is a high school, and we have two middle schools. One is an all-boys school and one is an all-girls school. Those two middle schools, I think, are the hallmark of what we are doing in Hillsborough County with single-gender education. The all-boys school, prior to becoming such, is Franklin Middle School. It was D school for years running. It was in intervening status when we turned it into an all-boys school. The all-girls school, while not quite as devastating statistics, was a magnet school with a very low population. People did not want to enroll their children in that magnet school. They were not choosing that school. So those schools are both urban schools, and they were chosen because they had a need to make a change. And that change has had some dramatic results. We are now in our third year of those schools being the all-boys preparatory academy and the all-girls preparatory academy. Just to give you an example of a little bit of the achievement gains that we are seeing right now, based on the 2013 FCAD and end-of-course exams at Farrell Girls Preparatory Academy, we have seen 8% gain among sixth-grade students passing FCAT reading, 8% gain among sixth-grade students passing FCAT math, 16% gain among seventh-grade students passing FCAT reading, 15% gain among seventh-grade students. Anything in double digits is statistically significant. 23% gain among eighth-grade students passing FCAT reading, 14% gain again for eighth-grade students passing FCAT math. And then our biggest hallmark at that school is 54.65% gain among students passing the algebra end of course exam. And the school grade increased two letters from its first year to its second year. It is now an A school. So it had been a C school. And one point I want to make here is that it takes 2 to 3 years to see the kinds of academic gains that we are looking for. You can immediately see gains in attendance, student engagement, perception surveys, discipline, all of those things you can see an immediate gain. It takes 2 to 3 years to see the academic gains. We actually expected to see those gains this year. We saw them last year, so we feel like we're a year ahead of schedule on that. At the all-boys school, we saw last year an 18% gain among sixth grade students passing FCAT reading, 14% FCAT math. In seventh grade, 11% gain in FCAT math, 7% gain in reading. The big one is 31% gain among eighth grade students passing FCAT writes. That, I might say, is an unheard of level of gain. And 100% of the students who took the geometry passed the end-of-course exam, earning high school credit for that course. The school grade also increased two letter grades. Remember, that school started at a D, and so it is now a B school. Other things that we are seeing, points of pride at both of those schools, they both won Magnet Merit Awards from the Magnet Schools of America in the first year that they were eligible to apply, which was 2013. They both have received the designation as Apple Distinguished Program Schools by Apple Incorporated for their integration of iPad technology. Both schools are one-to-one iPad technology integration. They both won a Confucius Classroom Award with support from the University of South Florida Confucius Institute and the Office of Chinese Language Council International. The boys have the same points of pride. We operate both of those schools as though they were one school on two campuses with two principals, and I have the distinct pleasure of being kind of the mediator, so to speak. I make sure that both schools are in alignment and that everything that is done at one is done equitably for the other. Just for the very point that you raised earlier about making sure that girls are not learning math via cooking and all of those kinds of gender stereotypes. We make a concerted effort not to do that sort of thing.
Thank you so much. Thank you for question. Representative Bracey.
Thank you, Chair. What do you attribute the success of these schools to? I mean, is it because there's not interaction with the other sex and so they're able to focus? I mean, These results are amazing. I'm just curious to hear, what do you think is behind? Obviously, they're all boys and all girls school, but I mean, what's the reason as to why?
You recognize?
There are two things that I would certainly contribute to. One of them is the level of training that we have provided to the teachers. That's a critical component. We have used national experts, multiple national experts, and we use what we consider to be the Hillsboro version. So we've drawn the very best of everything that we could glean from these national experts. Have an actual requirement for training for each teacher in a single gender classroom. The other thing is, according to the perception survey, we collected over 900 surveys this past summer from students, parents, and teachers, the key stakeholders. According to those surveys, the greatest contributing factor is the focus of the students. Without the opposite sex, the focus is much greater on academics. In those surveys, we also saw many, many, many comments saying less distractions. Distractions from whom? From what? From the opposite sex. So it's the separation that's creating the stronger focus, the stronger student engagement. Couple that with the fact that the teachers are fully trained to implement strategies for delivering the same instruction at two sites using techniques that are specific to the way a boy learns or specific to the way a girl learns. That's where we're getting those gains.
Thank you so much. Representative Hager and then Saunders.
Thank you, Chair. Question, and that is, given the powerful data that you just put in front of us, would it be your advice and counsel to this committee that the legislature itself move to gender-specific legislative committees?
You don't have to answer that one. Thank you. A stunning addition to the Choice and Innovation Committee this year, Representative Hager. Representative Saunders and Moraitis.
Thank you. I just heard a mandate to bring gender equity to Tallahassee. My question was related to the professional development piece. So by your interpretation of the bill, do you think that you right now would be compliant with the professional development requirement that would be added? And two, do you interpret the bill to mean that you can develop these things locally or that it would really have to be the state that kind of trickled it down?
Recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, to the first part of your question, we absolutely are in compliance. We've created our own regulation for training, and we offer intensive training in the summer. We offer a single gender symposium. We have between 125 to 200 attend that symposium, and it's from 3 to 4 days long, depending on funding available. And we've been doing that for several years. We have ongoing training throughout the school year, one day shot. We have every Monday 2 hours at some site where teachers can go and network and do a critical friends group model of training. We also do online book studies using boys and girls strategies for teaching boys. So, yes, we absolutely meet that part of the bill. I'm not sure I would have to defer to Representative Diaz to answer whether the intention is for there to be local control or state control over that, and I don't have an opinion on that matter.
Thank you so much. Really, thank you for coming up. I mean, one of the Oh, I forgot about your vice chair.
First of all, just congratulations to your school district. And I also want to recognize Broward, our superintendent, who's also instituted this as a way to help. How do you feel the bill itself, though, will help encourage this or help these gender-specific schools and classrooms?
I think the bill will do two things specifically. One, it will draw attention to gender-specific education, making it more available to districts who may not feel that they really know how to go about getting started. or have the money to do so. As I mentioned, a critical component of the success that we are having is the training of the teachers, and training teachers is expensive. And so without a strong backing in our own district, and our district is large, as you know, so we have the capacity to fulfill that need. Some districts don't have that capacity, and I think this bill will provide the opportunity for there to be funding for training opportunities so that other districts can implement single-gender classrooms. And I agree wholeheartedly with what Representative Diaz said about that being a choice that many families don't have, because if there's not a single-gender opportunity in public school and they don't have the means for private school, and that's something that I think would greatly enhance the menu of choice options in any district in the state of Florida.
Representative Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for sharing the good news on your schools. I did have a question concerning, have you had an opportunity to analyze the true cost, say, on a per student? Is it higher or lower than compared to the other school operations?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I haven't measured it per student. I can tell you approximately what our training costs are per semester and in the summer. Last semester, I spent $15,000 on professional development for single gender. This semester, $35,000. And in the summer, I typically spend between $75,000 and $100,000 based on what I can get. And we have 2,000 students. That math is pretty easy to do. So it's about $150,000 a year divided by 2,000 students.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and thanks for sharing not just the philosophy but the results. I think it's one of the great things of this committee is hearing these examples of innovation and excellence that just takes a different approach to get exceptional results. So thank you for coming up. And we're going to bring you back up to close for Representative Diaz, because your testimony was much more powerful than his opening, so if that's okay. Thank you. Okay, members, debate on the bill? Representative Hager, is Representative Pasadomo allowed to debate on this bill, given that she is the sole diverse element on your gender-specific type of committee structure?
I want to ask you if you want to.
Chair, we're still operating under the old rules, so the answer is yes.
Okay. I just wanted to say, being a product of an all-girls high school and then, of course, an all-girls college, I think the educational opportunity that I had was what made me what I am. Which I don't know whether you like that or not. But I just think it's terrific that we can do this for our students, and I wholeheartedly support the concept, and I'm glad that you brought this forward. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention the cooking and shopping concept, because I don't think there's anything wrong with everybody learning how to cook and shop right. So I think we should teach math to both boys and girls using cooking and shopping. and then we can also teach metrics and other things by teaching both boys and girls shop and things like, building. So I'm good with all that. Thank you.
As long as there's a budgeting class to go along with the shopping class.
Exactly.
It's from the best cook in the world.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Diaz, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say again, I just want to reiterate that this is exactly that. This is trying to create an innovative opportunity for our students to learn, not one size fits all. I will say to Representative Pasadomo that there is another bill that I'm a co-sponsor of with financial literacy. I think you might want to look into that for those items. But I would appreciate all of your support for this. Thank you.
Having closed, Kelly, can you please call the roll?
Chair Beleka.
Yes.
Representatives Ahern,
yes.
Bracey,
yes.
Diaz,
yes.
Hager,
yes.
Jones,
yes.
McGee,
yes.
Metz,
yes.
Moraitis,
yes.
Pasadomo,
yes.
Saunders,
yes.
Spano,
yes.
Stone.
Yes.
By your vote, show House Bill 313 is reported favorably as a committee substitute. Thanks, everybody, today for going through these two bills. And Representative Bracey moves that we rise.